Alrighty, Shabbat Shalom. And Shabbat Shalom to all those who will be watching with us today from this almost live message coming from Israel. We are June 25th, I believe, 2016. We're 2 weeks after Shavuot and freshly back from the Shavuot wilderness tour that was an amazing experience, which I'd like to go over with you today and share with you. And the message is called Lessons Learned from Shavuot Wilderness Tour 2016. We started the tour in Bethlehem, and I'd like to say pilgrimage more than tour because we're not tourists. We're there on a pilgrimage, learning the lessons that Yahweh is preparing for His people in these end times. And as I was saying at Shavuot, we're out of the Valley of Decision now. People who have not made a decision to enter the wilderness are going to be in trouble, but it's time to enter the wilderness and start preparing for what's coming, as Yahweh is preparing His remnant and His bride in so many things during the Shemitah that He's been blessing us with. And now we're ready to go to this next phase as His kingdom is marching ever so closer every day, every month, and every year. So we started in Bethlehem. You know, Bethlehem, Bethlehem, house of bread. Yeshua is the bread of life. We went over so many things there, seeing where the Messiah was born. But the one thing I wanted to just focus on here is we're talking about the wilderness. Is one of the things we saw is in the wilderness, you need a shepherd's heart. And that's one of the reasons why the children of Israel, their children, had to stay 40 years in the wilderness, because they had the heart of their parents from Egypt. They didn't have a shepherd's heart. So by staying 40 years in the wilderness, they were learning that. And in Bethlehem, why was Yeshua blessed to be born there? Because that's where the shepherds were. The shepherds were in the field, and the shepherds were blessed to be able to come and see the baby as soon as he was born. And really, like we said, we have to have a shepherd's heart. And that's what you find in the wilderness. If you look at our forefathers, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, what were they? They were shepherds. You know, they were shepherds of flocks. And today, we don't really see that very much. How many shepherds are in the world? And it's not a very practical job anymore, except maybe if you live in the Middle East or some of these remote areas. But certainly not every one of us has to be a physical shepherd of sheep and goats. But we do have to get a shepherd's heart. That's one of the things we need to learn. Numbers 14, because the next thing we did was we went to Qumran, where we spent a lot of time learning from the Qumran community. I'm going to read here in a few minutes from the Dead Sea Scrolls some of the things, because some big lessons that we learned from the Qumran community. But I'd like to read now Numbers 14 and verse 26. Numbers 14 and verse 26 says, "And Yahweh spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, 'How long shall I bear with this evil company who are murmuring against me? I have heard the murmurings of the sons of Israel, which they are murmuring against me.'" And we see this is a major problem of the wilderness. People murmuring, not complaining, not being satisfied with their position, rebellious against leadership, wanting to go their own way. And here we are, we're living in the Laodicean era. Laodicean means ruled by the people. It's that simple. And we have to make sure, particularly from Western society, because you do see it in third world countries, but not nearly as much as you see in the West, this Laodicean attitude of people wanting to be rogue, be on their own, make their own decisions, not follow any kind of leadership. And this is what Yahweh is ready to destroy them for. And Yahweh says, "Say to them, 'As I live, says Yahweh, as surely as you have spoken in my ears, so I will do to you. Your dead bodies will fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered sons, as to your whole number from 20 years and upward, and that you have murmured against me.'" Excuse me. "You shall certainly not come into the land which I lifted up my hand to cause you to live in, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh," you know, the Canaanite, who was also a Judahite, "and Joshua, who was from Ephraim, the son of Nun. As for your infants," right? "As for your infants, of whom you had said, 'They shall be a prey,' I shall bring them in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. As for you, your carcasses will fall in the wilderness." So here we are, you know, whether people realize it or not, the 40 years in the wilderness, we're already in it. So unless you mentally get in the wilderness and maybe even physically get in the wilderness, you're never going to survive, because there's not 40 years left to Yeshua's return. So the wilderness, the last 40 years, the reenactment of the first wilderness is already in process. And that's what he's saying, that unless you're mentally and physically learn the lessons from there. Your carcasses are going to die in the wilderness. You're physically not going to enter the promised land when Yeshua returns. And he says, and your son shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years. Why? Because they had to get rid of that evil heart that the parents had, that heart of unbelief, as we're going to see. Your sons will be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years and shall bear your fornications until your carcasses are wasted in the wilderness. By the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a day for a year, a day for a year. You shall bear your iniquities 40 years. You shall know my alienation from you. And I look as my background coming from Church of God, which was a remnant of the true congregation of Yeshua. And I look that all these people, from the time that the founder, Herbert Armstrong, died, all of those who didn't follow in the right footsteps, who went the wrong way. And as I look, I see almost all of those old elders are dead. All of them that thought the kingdom was coming in the 1970s and the 1980s, and it didn't come. And just about every single one of them died in the wilderness. So it's something we do need to learn for. And he says, you know, a day for a year, as 40 days, they spied out the land 40 years. And he says, I am Yahweh, I have spoken. I shall do this to all this evil company who are gathered together against me. They shall be brought to an end in this wilderness, and there they shall die. So we learned this from the Qumran community. You know, that the Qumran community, very interesting. They had a theology when they left. They went into the wilderness 196 BC, and they were there until the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, and then up to 73 when Masada went down. So here it was that these people, they went to the wilderness knowing, at least in their mind, believing that the Messiah was not returning in their lifetime. Their theology was that there would be 100 years, that there would be 20 years of teaching of a righteous priest, and then there would be a 40-year war, and then there would be 40 more years of a wilderness experience. So can you imagine the dedication of these people? Because today people want to know, well, when is it going to happen? When will Babylon fall? When is all this going to happen? And I'll get out of there just months beforehand and I'll be safe. And it doesn't work that way. These people who were righteous people in Qumran, they realized that they needed to purify their life for their children. So they realized they were not pure enough for the Messiah to return in their lifetime. So what did they do? They wanted to go and prepare for their children, just like we read here, that Yahweh couldn't take that first generation into the promised land. But he said, I will take your children. But they're going to have to learn 40 years. They're going to have to learn to have that shepherd's heart and get away from the evil mindset that the parents had. And we have the same thing today, that unfortunately most Westerners will not make it into the promised land. They're not going to get out of the wilderness. And the key is, do you have that shepherd's heart? Are you looking toward your children and maybe your grandchildren to say, I need to sanctify my life. I need to come out of this world because I'm too worldly. I know that I can't qualify, but maybe my children can. So are you doing that? Are you making the sacrifices for the next generation and maybe the generation after that? And this is where the Qumran community was at. Basically, they were the first kibbutz. The name of the community is called Yahad. That's where we started our HaYahad, the togetherness, the name of our program here in Israel, our school that we've been doing for the last 12 years. And that's what they were called. They were called the Yahad, the togetherness. So what I want to do is I want to read you out of the Dead Sea Scrolls, the official scrolls themselves. I want to read you some of the community rules of these people, because now as we're starting kibbutzes now, praise Yahweh, I mean, things that I talked about for the last 25 years are actually happening and just started in the Shemitah, that we have real kibbutzes. We have brethren living in community, not all in kibbutzes right now, but living in community. And this Shemitah has really started a movement, at least in the congregation of Yahweh Jerusalem, that's not going back in the other direction. People are submitting to the leadership and the elders. Everybody is united. They're one in mind. They're one in purpose. Others that don't believe in it or can't stand unity are leaving or going in another direction. And Yahweh's spirit is really moving. And I could tell you the wheat is being separated from the chaff. And there's thousands, I mean thousands upon thousands of new people, new congregations, new brethren that are wanting to join us just in this year. And we can't keep up with it. We do one mission trip and before it's even done, we're setting up another mission trip because we're finding out there's thousands more. There's 20, 30, 40 congregations here. And it's unbelievable how much Yahweh is blessing this and how it's going. So let's learn. Let's learn from these people some of these things that we could see here and see what they were like. Very interesting. I'm going to start here before I get into their community rules. That it says, this man that I'm reading from the Complete Dead Sea Scrolls from Giza Vermes, one of the best translations, and he says, there are, to my knowledge, no writings in ancient Jewish sources parallel to the community rule that I'm going to read here. He says, but a similar type of literature flourished among Christians between the 2nd and 4th centuries, called the Church Orders and the Apostolic Constitution. So very interesting, and I've said this many times, I need to redo the Dead Sea Scrolls in the Wilderness that I did many, many years ago, because I do believe there's a link between this community and between the first century believers without a shadow of a doubt, and he's proving it here. But let's go through some of these community rules, because they really don't fit into the mindset of a Western mindset. You have to have a mindset of love, of submission, of obedience, away from your own way into the full way of Yahweh. He says, all those who freely devote themselves to his truth shall bring all their knowledge, powers, and possessions into the community of Elohim, that they may purify their knowledge in the truth of Elohim's precepts and order their powers according to his ways of perfection and all their possessions according to his righteous counsel. So anyone who joined this community, and there were more than 2,000 throughout Israel, of these Essenes, but there were about 400 to 450 down at Qumran. When you joined, it was a real kibbutz. Everything was communal. Everything you owned had to be put into the community pot. There was a one-year probationary period, and unless you were accepted after that 1 year, you would get your things back, so it didn't officially go to the community until you were accepted. And it was very interesting that in order to be accepted in the community, it wasn't just by a majority vote. Every last person in that community had to vote for you. So if there were 450 people in Qumran and 449 voted yes, but one person voted no, you would not be allowed in the community, because they wanted to keep a cut. They wanted to be truly unified. And this is the problem we have today sometimes in the congregations. Not only do we have people who are rebellious and maybe having problems with other brethren, but we have people who are rebelliously talking against the leadership, talking against our doctrine. They come to the feast and they smile to your face, and then they go behind your back telling people, well, I don't really believe America's Babylon. Well, I don't really believe this. If that's the case, what on earth are you doing in our congregation? Why be a hypocrite? Why come before us and act one way and then behind the back do something else? You're the hypocrite, not me, because I believe the same way for the last 33 years. And I'm boldly preach what I believe. But if you believe something different, and yet you're coming into our midst to just to try to bring this confusion or try to bring contention, then you're the hypocrite. It's not us that are the hypocrite. Because in our congregation, our elders, our congregations, we are completely unified in our doctrine and in our leadership. And the people believe in my leadership. The elders believe in my leadership coming from Jerusalem. And if somebody doesn't, well, that's fine, but you really don't belong then in this congregation, because we are moving toward this. And like I said, it's working. We have kibbutzes that are starting in Philippines. We have them in Africa, and they're growing there. And the people are loving it. And it's really working. And it's such a spirit of unity you can't imagine. And that's what's happening here, that they have to be the right way. Let me continue with the community rules. He says that the priest shall enter first, ranked one after another. So this is how they come into their community. They come in by rank and the perfection of their spirit. Then the Levites, and thirdly, all the people, one after another, in their thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens, that every Israelite may know his place in the community of Elohim according to the everlasting design. No man shall move down from his place nor move up from his allotted position, for according to the holy design, they shall all of them be in a community of truth and virtuous humility, of loving kindness and good intent one toward the other, and they shall all of them be sons of the everlasting company. Wow. Can you imagine this? Here it is. 1 Corinthians 12, 1 Corinthians 14, Romans 12, right? Everybody is given gifts according to how Yahweh willed, and everybody is happy with their gifts. Everybody is happy with their position. Nobody is trying to usurp the position or the spiritual gift of somebody else, but everybody using those gifts in judicial order, which means voluntary and reciprocal, toward the love of each other, toward the building of the body of Messiah. And every single person here, it didn't matter if you were a priest, a Levite, or just a community member, everyone was allowed and encouraged to use their gifts, and they used them for the betterment of the the whole society. He says, he has created man to govern the world and has appointed for him two spirits to which to walk until the time of his visitation, time the Messiah returns, the spirit of truth and injustice. Those born of truth spring from a fountain of light, but those born of injustice spring from a source of darkness. All the children of righteousness are ruled by the prince of light and walk in the ways of light, but the children of injustice are ruled by the angel of darkness and walk in the ways of darkness. The angel of darkness leads all the children of righteousness astray, and until his end, all their sins, iniquities, wickedness, and their unlawful deeds are caused by the dominion in accordance with the mysteries of Elohim. Every one of their chastisements and every one of the seasons of their distress shall be brought about by the rule of his persecution, for his allotted spirits seek the overthrow of the sons of light. But the Elohim of Israel and his angel of truth, or his messenger of truth, will succor all the sons of light, for he has created the spirits of light and darkness and founded every action upon them and established every deed upon their ways. Wow. Continuing here. And these say that the rules for the men of the community who have freely pledged themselves to be converted from all evil and to cling to the commandments of Yahweh, according to his will. They shall separate from the congregation of the men of injustice and shall unite with respect to the Torah and possessions under the authority of the sons of Zadok, the priests who keep the covenant, and of the multitude of the men of the community who hold fast to the covenant. Every decision concerning doctrine, property, and justice shall be determined by them. So here it was. These people believed in their leaders. They believed in their leaders 100%. You want to know something? If there was a member or a person who came against the leader, it wasn't that member against the leader. It was the other 449 members there that would tell that person, you're gone. That's it. Because everyone was united 100%. They were united in doctrine. They were united supporting their elders. They were united in their leadership. And that's the way Qumran worked. That's the way. And that's what I see now. Why we couldn't have kibbutz until now. Because you couldn't if you have everybody wanting to do it their own way. If you have people who are rebelliously going against the doctrine of the congregation. If you have people backbiting each other and fighting and gossiping behind the backs. You'll never have ikad. You'll never have community. You'll never have kibbutz. But here it was. The only people that were there were people that believed it 100%. And I say it all the time. The fact that somebody's sitting in a chair next to you in a meeting we have, or even at the Feast of Tabernacles or Sukkot, don't think that's a brother or sister. You'll know them by their fruits. And unfortunately, many times we allow guests to come in, and sometimes even people who say they're members of our congregation, and they're disloyal, they're disruptive, they bring confusion, they won't submit to the leadership. And you're never going to be in the kibbutz, and you'll never be in the kingdom of Yahweh. Because this is the model. These people, remember, these people down in Qumran, right when Israel is ceasing to be a nation, they hide these scrolls, and then for 2,000 years, nobody ever hears of them, nothing. On the eve, the very eve that they're voting for Israel to become a nation again, these scrolls are found, the first scrolls. Could that be a coincidence? No. So there's a great message in here for us to understand from these people. So let me continue here. He says, whoever approaches the council of the community shall enter the covenant of Elohim in the presence of all who have freely pledged themselves. Okay? This is not, they're not being forced to. They're not afraid to. This is 450 people who all are akkad. They willingly all believe the same thing. They all submit to the same system. So you can call them whatever you want. You can call them a cult. You can call them this. But it worked. It worked. Because they were akkad, and they had a wonderful community there for more than 270 years until, unfortunately, the Romans came and destroyed Israel. So he says, whoever approaches the council of the community shall enter the covenant of Elohim in the presence of all, freely pledge himself. He shall undertake by a binding oath to return with all his heart and soul to every commandment of the Torah of Moses in accordance with all that has been revealed to the sons of Zadok, the priests, keepers of the covenant and seekers of his will, to the multitude of men of their covenant, who together have freely pledged themselves to his truth and to walking in the way of his delight. And he shall undertake by the covenant to separate from all the men of injustice who walk the way of wickedness. And this was something they were very, very big on. As a believer, why would you have association with people who aren't walking this way? Why would you have friendships? I had someone tell me one time, Don, I feel more comfortable with my friends of the world than I do the brethren. I had to tell him very simply, that's because you're too worldly. That's because you're too worldly. How can you ever feel more comfortable with worldly people than you can with the people of Yahweh? It says, they shall inscribe them in order, one after another, according to their understanding and their deeds, that everyone may obey his companion, the man of lesser rank, obeying his superior. So in the eyes of self-worth, they were all equal. Nobody was above another, but in judicial order and authority, yes. Yes, in judicial order and authority, just like in Yahweh's congregation, there is order. There is order. There is more authority coming from me from Jerusalem than the local elder, and there's authority from the local elder over the people. Doesn't mean the self-worth is anymore, but there is an authority that comes there. And they may examine their spirit and deeds yearly, so that each man may be advanced in accordance with his understanding and perfection of way, or move down in accordance with his distortion. So just like at Passover, every year they're examining themselves so that they can grow in the faith, and the people that are growing or moving up in the community to serve more, and the people that aren't, are not. They shall rebuke one another in truth, humility, and love. Let no man address his companion with anger or ill temper, or a spirit of wickedness. Let him not hate him because of his uncircumcised heart, but let him rebuke him on the very same day, lest he incur guilt because of him. And furthermore, let no man accuse his companion before the congregation without being admonished in the presence of witnesses. So Matthew 18 is also being admonished here. And then it talks about every night of the year, they take a third of every single night of the year to study the Torah. The whole community. Every single night, a third of every night of the year is there to study the Torah. Wow, what a rank of people. He says, no man shall interrupt a companion before his speech is ended, nor speak before a man of higher rank. Each man will speak in his turn, and in an assembly of the congregation, no man will speak without the consent of the congregation, nor indeed of the guardian of the congregation. So again, there's judicial order. People just don't burst out. The same when you're in a courtroom. You know, there's judicial order. The judge says when someone speaks, when they don't speak, whether he takes an objection from the attorney or not. There has to be order there. It's not just people doing what they want. He says, and later, when he comes to stand before the congregation, they shall all deliberate his case, and according to the decision of the council of the congregation, he shall either enter or depart. After he has entered the council of the community, he shall not touch the pure meal of the congregation until one full year has ended, until he has been examined concerning his spirit and deeds, nor shall he have any share of the property of the congregation. So here it is, very simple. The council and the guardian of the congregation, they were the ones that had the control over it. And when they made a decision, that was it. The people followed it. They supported their leadership. Is the leadership always going to make the right decision? No. But at least you have a judicial process. And without that judicial process, that's where you're going to have abuses. So Yahweh put the judicial process there, like Deuteronomy 17, right? You come to Jerusalem, the law goes forth from Zion, and people have to follow it. You know, and if you don't follow it and you break down the judicial process, you're left with nothing. Because what you're going to have then is you're going to have nepotism, you're going to have people going their own way, and it's not going to work. So what would happen? What would be the penalties? Let's look here. These are still the community rules. It says, if one of them has lied deliberately in matters of property, he shall be excluded from the pure meal of the congregation for 1 year and shall do penance with respect to one quarter of his food. So somebody who lied deliberately in matters of property would be suspended for a year and a quarter of his food would be taken away. If any man has uttered the most venerable name, the name of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, even though frivolously, right, breaking the third commandment, or as a result of shock or for any other reason, while reading the book or blessing, he shall be dismissed and shall return to the council of the community no more. That these people uphold and revere the name of Yahweh, of course they did. You could literally get kicked out of the community forever for disrespecting the name of Yahweh. Whoever has deliberately deceived his companion by word or deed shall do penance for 6 months. Whoever has spoken foolishly will do penance for 3 months. Whoever has interrupted his companion while speaking will do penance 10 days. Whoever has been so poorly dressed that when drawing his hand from beneath his garment, his nakedness has been seen, he shall do penance for 30 days. So even here, there are only men here. 450 men, and still modesty is something that if you violate the modesty, you're going to get punished. Whoever has gone about slandering his companion shall be excluded from the pure meal of the congregation for 1 year and shall do penance. But whoever has slandered the congregation and the leadership, he shall be expelled from among them and shall return no more. So it's a serious thing, like we were seeing in Numbers, when brethren, or unfortunately even at times elders, will come against the leadership that Yahweh has ordained, and here they would be completely removed from the community for good. Whoever has murmured against the authority of the community shall be expelled and shall not return again. But if he has murmured against his companion unjustly, he shall do penance for 6 months. So we really see these are people that Yahweh has for us to learn from, and they really understood judicial order. He says, and when these become members of the community in Israel, according to all these rules, they shall separate from the habitation of unjust men and shall go into the wilderness to prepare there the way of him, as it is written, prepare in the wilderness the way, make straight in the desert a path for our Elohim. Exactly the scripture John the Baptist used. This path is a study of the Torah, which he commanded by the hand of Moses, that they may do according to all that has been revealed from age to age, and as the prophets have revealed by his Holy Spirit. But as for him who has sinned deliberately, he shall never return. Only the man who has sinned inadvertently shall be tried for 2 years, that his way in council may be made perfect according to the judgment of the congregation. And afterwards he shall be inscribed in his rank in the community of holiness. When these become members of the community in Israel, according to all these rules, they shall establish the spirit of holiness according to everlasting truth. And these men, they call themselves men of the new covenant. That's what they believed. They believed, because of the corruption that was in the temple, that they were coming and preparing the way for the Messiah to come and the new age to come. He says, he shall guide them in all knowledge according to the spirit of each and according to the rule of the age, and shall thus instruct them in the mysteries of the marvelous truth, so that in the midst of the men of the community they may walk perfectly together in all that has been revealed to them. This is the time for the preparation of the way into the wilderness, and he shall teach them to do all that is required at the time and to separate from all those who have not turned aside from injustice. Well, like I said, 2,000 years, these scrolls have been hiding there until the day Israel is becoming a nation, they come out, and this is what Yahweh wants us to learn. That if we are going to make it through the wilderness and we are going to be in his kingdom is going to be like this. There will be judicial order. There will be a structure of authority. And if we don't learn to obey that now, we are not going to be there later. So, you know, the interesting part, though, studying the Qumran community is that, believe it or not, very, very, very few people ever had to be kicked out of the community. And you know why? Because they all wanted to be there. That's why you had 1 year probationary period and even a second year probationary period until all your possessions went over to the community, just in case. Because they only wanted people in that community that 100% believed the same way, that were Ikad, that were one in mind and purpose and soul. And isn't that the way it's supposed to be in the congregation? Aren't we supposed to be losing our will to the will of Yahweh? Aren't we supposed to be surrendering our will to the doctrine of Yahweh, the doctrine that was set by the apostles and given to the other elders and the other elders and the other elders and are given to the elders today, myself included, instead of going our own rebellious way, going to the internet, trying to find our own things? It would have never worked here for these people. So here it is, we see that, we really see that this is something that is amazing. And something that these people, I think I better move on from here as we have a lot to go over there. But just amazing, I will do another message on the sect itself that was down there. But I can tell you right now how important this is, because I can tell you, if you're going to go your own way, and if you refuse to follow the mandate that Yahweh set out, just like we see here, you will never, ever be part of what Yahweh's doing. And like I said, it's already happening now. And the people that are living on these kibbutzes that are following this mandate, they are the happiest people I've ever met in my life. And they're really happy that they're doing this. So, and again, it could only work, not if people are forced to, but if everybody has that same mindset and they want to be united that way. It's that simple. Next, we went to the Valley of Elah. The Valley of Elah, where David fought Goliath. And I'll just read a little bit here from 1 Samuel 16. 1 Samuel 16, 1. And Yahweh spoke to Samuel and told, when will you mourn for Saul? For I have rejected him from reigning over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have seen a king for me among his sons. So Samuel goes down there, and then we see what happens, verse 6. And it happened when they came in that he saw Eliab and said, surely before Yahweh is his Messiah. And Yahweh said to Samuel, do not look on the appearance nor at the height of his stature, for I have rejected him. For man does not see what he sees. For man looks for the eyes, but Yahweh looks to the heart. And David was a man after his own heart. And why? Because David was a shepherd. Verse 11. And Samuel said to Jesse, "Are these all the young men?" And he said, "There yet remains the youngest, and behold, he is feeding the flock," right? The shepherd is always with the flock. And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit until he comes." And he sent and brought him in, and he was ruddy, redheaded, with beautiful eyes and good form. And Yahweh said, "Rise up, anoint him, for this is he." And Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the spirit of Yahweh came upon David from that day and onward. And Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. So here we see David is picked because he has a shepherd's heart. And then what does he do? When he fights Goliath, he doesn't do it by sword. He doesn't put on the armor. But what does he take? He takes his shepherd's staff. He takes five smooth stones from the valley there, the stream that was in the valley. And we were right there. We were on top. We were in Tel Kayafa, which is biblical Sha'im, the double-gated city that was just found not that long ago. And it was amazing being up there and seeing it and then reading the story. And there's nothing like being there. I tell the people now, every time anyone that was there reads the story, you can visualize the whole thing that was there. But the most important thing is that Yahweh used a shepherd to do it because he had the shepherd's heart. And the men of war couldn't do it because they had fear, but David had the shepherd's heart. The shepherd only thinks of the sheep, even sleeps in the door of the pen. He's one-minded in goal and purpose to care for and protect the sheep, even to risk his own life. So everything that we're seeing here, just like with the sheep and goat sermon, it all adds into the same thing. We have to become shepherds, at least in mindset. We don't have to have flocks, but we have to have that mindset of a shepherd's mind. And then, very interesting, right after that, we went to Beersheba. I want to read in Genesis 21. Genesis 21, starting in verse 22. The place where Abraham dug the well himself. Amazing place. Almost 4,000 years old, a little less than that. And we got to see it. Genesis 21 and verse 22. And it happened at that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the general of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, "Elohim is with you in all that you do. And now swear to me here by Elohim that you will not lie to me and to my son and to my heir according to the kindness which I have sworn to you. Do to me and to the land in which you have lived in." And Abraham said, "I will swear." And Abraham reproved Abimelech on account of a well of water which the slaves of Abimelech had seized. And Abimelech said, "I do not know who has done this thing, and also you have not told me, even I have not heard except today." And Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave to Abimelech, and both of them cut a covenant, right? With sheep and oxen. Abraham, again, another shepherd. And Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What are these seven ewe lambs which you have set by themselves?" And he said, "You shall take the seven ewe lambs from my hand so that it may become for me a witness that I dug this well." Like I said, we swear, and it's a pretty deep well there. We saw the well that was there. On account of this, that place is called Beersheba because of two of them swore there. And it's a play on words in the Hebrew. Beer meaning well, and Sheva meaning seven, but also oath. Seven being the number of completion. So it's seven wells or seven oaths. They're cutting covenant there, and it's a good covenant, an everlasting covenant. And they shall cut a covenant in Beersheba, and Abimelech and Phicol, the general of the army, rose up, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there he called in the name of Yahweh El Olam. So here we look. Why tamarisk tree? When you go there, the tamarisk tree was right next to the well. We got to see it. And if you go up and you taste the leaves, you'll find out that the tamarisk has salty leaves on it, because it's part of the covenant, showing it's an everlasting covenant. So Yahweh cuts covenant with Abraham before this. We see in Genesis 13, Genesis 15, Genesis 17, he promises about Isaac being born. Isaac is just born in the chapter, in the verses right before this. And then it's a reinstitution of the everlasting covenant over here in Beersheba, the well of the oath. And then what happens, chapter 22 and verse 1, what's the very next thing that happens? And it happened after these things, the Elohim testing Abraham. So like we know, sometimes people that get baptized and they think, "Oh, I want to get baptized so I'll never have a problem again." And I tell people, when you get baptized, expect to have a lot of problems right away. Because now you just moved up on Satan's hit list. Because now you're relevant to him. So again, he is going to try you once you enter covenant relationship. And Yahweh allows it for testing. And this word for testing, that comes from the root word nes in Hebrew, which actually is even the modern word for miracle, it's a test for others to see. It's not necessarily something that is tempting you, but Yahweh allows us to be tempted as examples for others to see. And we want our life to be a good example, a good test, right? Like I always say at the Bible school, one of the first things I have the students do, make a legacy. What is the legacy of your life? And you could lie about your life, you can die, you can lie about your life, but at the end of the day, your legacy is your legacy. You know, when you look at the King Saul, everybody has in their mind about King Saul, disloyal, went back on Yahweh, you know, didn't have patience. And then you think of King David, the opposite, man after Yahweh's own heart, loyal, a shepherd's heart. So what your legacy is going to be is simply by what you do, and you can't change it from there. So the testing that comes after that is a testing for each of us to leave a legacy for our life from there. Luke 12 and verse 48 says, "But he who does not know and does the thing that is worthy of stripes will be beaten with fewer stripes. For anyone who is given much to him, much is required from him. And to whom they have committed much to him, much more they will require by his hand." So do you think that way? Do you think that since you're one out of a million people in this world that's called, the responsibility that comes to you? And Yahweh expects that. And I'll tell you something. I know I'm one of just a handful of people in this world that has seen the things that Yahweh has blessed me to see here in Israel. To see the tabernacle of David. To see where Sodom and Gomorrah was. To see the Red Sea crossing. To see all the places in Jordan, all the stops of the Israelites. To see the real Gilgal. So many things that are here in Israel that Yahweh has allowed me to see. And I know there's a responsibility because it's not for me. It's for me to share these things like I'm doing today. And in a minute we'll go over some pictures that you could see part of the wilderness in the wilderness of Zin where we were. But there's a responsibility in the kingdom that we have to be sharing these things. We have to be loyal to Yahweh. We have to be loyal to the leaders he puts there, because it's our responsibility to do so. Revelation 2 and verse 25. He says, "But what you have, hold until I shall come." Are you losing what you have? Are you gaining in the Spirit? Are you growing in the Spirit? Are you losing the little bit you have? Remember the parable of the talents. The one who hid it in a napkin, the little he had was taken away from him. Hold on to what you have until I shall come. "And the one overcoming and the one keeping my works until the end, I will give to him authority over the nations. And he will shepherd them with an iron staff." Right? Back to the shepherd's staff. "Like the vessels of the potter, they shall be shattered, as I have received from my Father. And I will give to him the morning star. The one who has an ear, hear what the Spirit says to the congregation." So it's those who endure to the end and overcome. And that's what this is about. The wilderness is about overcoming. Remember, in Song of Solomon, the bride enters the wilderness defiled, but she comes out white. You've got to enter the wilderness. It's time to get into the wilderness, like I said, mentally, physically, in different ways. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But if you don't get through the wilderness, you'll never get to the promised land. There's no other way to the promised land except through the wilderness. And it's a time of overcoming. It's a time we must be constantly overcoming, or we will be overcome. Do not be deceived by the deceitfulness of sin. If you are not overcoming, you will be overcome. And you'll be overcome by the very thing that you're not overcoming. It's either you're going to overcome it or it's going to overcome you. And you get to the point where at first you realize maybe, oh, I have anger or I don't have enough patience. And then after a while, once it overcomes you, then you start rationalizing it. And you stop even trying to overcome, and you start blaming other people for your sins. And one by one, they fall away. And it's sad because a lot of people falling away now as we're getting closer to the end, because it's prophesied. It's prophesied. There'll be a great falling away in the end time. And the ones who are not overcoming and are not working against their pride and building a spirit of humility, they're falling away. It's very, very sad to see it, but it's happening. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 16. "Then we went to the campground." Next, we went to the campground. And it says, "Then I praised mirth," and the word is simhat, joy. "I praised joy because nothing is good for a man under the sun except to eat and to drink and be glad. For that shall go with him in his labor for the days of his life, which the Elohim gives him under the sun." Wow. So here we are. Here we are in the wilderness, right? You could see a little area there that could be used as a campground. But when we got to the campground, we realized how simple life can be. How simple life can be. Look at that. Look at that wilderness. What complication is there? You know, there's no internet, there's no television, there's all the things that complicate your life. I walk down the streets and it doesn't matter whether I'm in Israel or Babylon or Europe or anywhere else. Everywhere you go, even in third world countries, people are zombies with these little idle iPods all day long, whether it's a train, whether it's a bus, no matter what it is, looking at those things, looking at those things, looking at those things, texting each other. And it's all bringing bondage, right? Revelation 18, 13 says, Babylon has made slaves of the souls of men. And all of this communications and all of this technology, people will be running to and fro and knowledge will be increased. That knowledge is not freed people, it's enslaved them. And this is where freedom is. Look at this. Freedom is in the wilderness. It's so nice as we're sitting in a Bedouin tent having our wonderful dinner that you can't imagine, all the different meats and salads and all the things that they were able to give us. Of course, we couldn't eat the salads because they were not all Shemitah kosher, but we did bring some of our own food, and everything we did eat was Shemitah kosher. But it was just wonderful to sit there with good brethren and enjoy and relax on pillows. And that's all that life is about. Like it says here in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing greater, you know, in life than to enjoy, eat your food, and enjoy your labor of your days, which the Elohim gives to you. Then we had experts came out. In my mind, one of the things that I wanted to go over in the wilderness was, I wanted to learn what plants you can use for food, and what plants you can use for medicine, and what do you do against predators and against snakes. And this was one of the things I'm thinking. We could learn all these things there so we can share and teach with the other brethren. So we got one of the top experts in Israel. He's even a professor at the college in the Negev. And we wanted to learn all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, as he's teaching and he's teaching and he's teaching, I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is good what I'm learning here, these little things, but it's not really teaching me how to survive in the wilderness. And then the man made something, he said something very, very profound. That as an expert, he said, look, I'm an expert on all these things, and I don't think I could survive in the wilderness. And then it hit me, wow. Zechariah 4 and verse 6. Zechariah 4 and verse 6. Then he answered and spoke to me, saying, this is the word of Yahweh to Zerubbabel, saying, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says Yahweh. Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit. And the bottom line is, at the end of the day, one of the biggest lessons we learned is, you can't survive in the wilderness without faith. There's nothing physical, and I know this isn't good for preppers, because preppers want to survive on their own, and they have 1,000 ways to figure out, like we said, the aquaponics, how to create your own water out of a rock and all the other things, wind power. And those things are great. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with knowing these techniques. But at the end of the day, you will not survive the wilderness without faith. Only Yahweh will get you through the wilderness. So what a lesson that was, because it builds our faith. It's not anything physical that's going to help you get through it. You know, like I said, I love the fact of learning about plants. We love the fact we use essential oils and what they're good for. Nothing against that kind of stuff. But that is not going to get you through the wilderness. It simply isn't. The only thing that will get you through the wilderness is faith. Isaiah 48. Because what are you going to do when there's no water in the wilderness? How are you going to create your own water out of nothing? Now, only Yahweh can do it. Isaiah 48 and verse 17. Isaiah 48 and verse 17. It says, so says Yahweh, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. I am Yahweh, your Elohim, who teaches you to profit, who leads you in the way you should go. Oh, that you would listen to my commandments. Then your peace would have been like the river, and your righteousness like the waves of the sea. And your seed would have been like the sand, and your offspring of your boughs like its grain. His name would not have been cut off nor destroyed from my presence. Go out of Babylon, flee from the Chaldeans. Tell this with the voice of rejoicing. Let it be heard. Let it go out to the end of the earth. Say, Yahweh has redeemed his servant Jacob. And they did not thirst. He led them in the deserts. He made water flow out of the rock. And the water gushed out. There is no peace, says Yahweh, to the wicked. Wow. And we found it. We found water in the desert. This is out there in the wilderness of Zin. And we were seeing Yahweh showing that he can bring water in the wilderness. And it's not the first time. I've been also to Kadesh Barnea. This is the wilderness of Zin, where we found water holes. And there's water there. There's water there, but Yahweh has to make it happen. And Yahweh can make it come from a rock, but Yahweh has to bring the water in the desert. Do you have the faith to trust in Yahweh to survive? Because I'm telling you right now, if you're living in the world of commercial Babylon, I'm not just talking about USA, but I'm talking about all first world countries. I'm talking about everywhere from Australia to all over Europe, America, Canada, all these places. Face it, it's ingrained in the people to trust in health insurance, to trust in the paycheck of their job, to trust in refrigerators and air conditioners and heaters and all the things of that. You know, like I said, the preppers. You look at some of these preppers are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on everything from gold bars to water purification systems and all this stuff. And again, not to say anything's wrong with it, but it's not going to help you survive in the wilderness. You either have to believe that Yahweh will make that water come, or you're simply not going to survive. It's that simple. Exodus 17. Exodus, the 17th chapter. Here again is the wilderness of Zin. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel pulled up stakes from the wilderness of Zin. You're seeing a real good picture here of that. And it's desert. Look at it. Mountainous desert. Not a very easy place to get through. Not a very easy place to go over. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel pulled up stakes from the wilderness of Zin according to their journeys by the mouth of Yahweh. And they camped in Rephidim. And there was no water for the drinking of the people. And the people fought with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to him, "Why do you fight with me? Why do you tempt Yahweh?" And when you go against the leadership that Yahweh has placed, you're not fighting with man, you're fighting with Yahweh. You know, I'm almost 20 years that I'm doing this work from Israel, from the time that I started. It actually is 20 years. It started in just about 20 years ago, going on the 20th year. When I first did the first trip to Israel. But over these 20 years, Yahweh has opened up doors that no man could ever open. Yahweh has done amazing things through this ministry. And when people fight against the ministry, you're fighting Yahweh. You're not fighting man. And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, "Why then have you caused us to go up from Egypt to kill us and my sons with my livestock with thirst?" Right? And think about it. Look at that wilderness. Think about 2.8 million people there. Livestock, right? Sheep and goats, people, babies, and no water to drink, right? And Moses cried to Yahweh saying, "What shall I do to this people? Yet a little while and they'll stone me." And Yahweh said to Moses, "Pass out in front of the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff in which you smote the Nile and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall smite the rock, and water will come out of it, and the people will drink." And Moses did so before the eyes of the elders of Israel. And one called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the contention of the sons of Israel, and because of their testing of Yahweh, saying, "Is Yahweh in our midst or not?" Wow, is Yahweh in our midst or not? Look at, this is at the point where they already saw the 10 miracles in Egypt. They saw Yahweh come with the pillar of fire, with the pillar, the cloud during the day and the pillar of fire at night. They sat there and they saw the Red Sea being parted. They passed through on dry ground and they saw Yahweh close it up on the most powerful army in their day of Egypt, and all of Pharaoh's horsemen drowned in the sea. And yet still, they had no appreciation. They had no belief. They were just rebellious, self-willed traitors. Where do you stand? Where do you stand? Because I'm telling you something. We were 3 days out in that wilderness, and it was hot. There was times that it got up to around 47, 48 Celsius, which is around 112, 114 Fahrenheit. And just being out there a few hours was tough. Never mind 40 years. 40 years. At what point, when you don't get what you want, do you start being disgruntled against Yahweh and against his leadership? Because again, you're not being disgruntled to man. You're being disgruntled against Yahweh. Hebrews 3 and verse 4. And if you don't think that this will keep you out of the kingdom, you better believe it will.
Hebrews 3 in verse 4. Hebrews 3 and verse 4. He says, "For every house is built by someone, but he who built all things is Yahweh. And Moses, as a servant, was faithful in all his house for a testimony of the things having been spoken. But Messiah is son over his own house, whose house we are, if truly we hold fast the boldness and rejoicing of the hope firm to the end." Right? The body of Messiah. We are literally, Yeshua said, "I will destroy this sanctuary, this temple, and rebuild it in 3 days." And he's talking about the sanctuary of his body. And we're all part of that body. We are part of that tabernacle. "Because of this, even as the Holy Spirit says, 'Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts to provoke him, as the murmurers did in the day of temptation in the wilderness. There where your fathers tempted me, even though they saw my works for 40 years. 40 years, remember, even after Yahweh said, "You're going to die in the wilderness. You know, your carcasses are going to die." Why do you think they didn't go back to Egypt then? Why do you think they stayed knowing they're going to die? Because the manna still came every day. Because Yahweh still provided for them. Because their sandals still didn't wear out. Even the ones that were to perish, Yahweh still provided for them day and night in the wilderness. "Because of this, I was angry with that generation," said, "they always go astray in their hearts, and they did not know my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they will not enter my rest." Those some odd 2 million Israelites will not be in the promised land. They died in the physical wilderness, and they will not go into the kingdom of Yahweh, as he swore in his wrath, because they saw with their eyes, and still they did not believe. "Beware therefore, my brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart which does not believe, and you will be cut off from the living Elohim. But search your hearts each day, until the day which is called the day, that not any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." And that's why I tried to tell you. The wilderness is to overcome the sin. The wilderness is to get the pattern of the kingdom of Yahweh in your mind. And like I always say, it's a mentality as well as a reality. But if you allow sin in your life and you allow it to go on, then you're going to stop fighting it, and you're even going to start blaming other people for your sins. "For we have become partakers of Messiah if truly from the beginning to the very end we hold steadfast to this true covenant. As to the saying, 'Today, if you hear even the echoes of his voice, do not harden your hearts to anger him.' Who were those who heard and provoked him? Was it not those who came out of Egypt through Moses? Although not all of them. But with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with the one sinning whose bones lay in the wilderness?" And I've been to places in Kadesh Barnea where I've seen some of the graves of these very people. I've seen them. And some of them, they even moved from Kadesh Barnea to Israel once Israel came into the promised land. "And to whom did he swear they would not enter his rest, except to those not obeying?" So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. And like I said, it's easy when you're sitting in your air conditioning room in your house, you know, watching television and being able to go in your refrigerator and get cold water to say, "Yes, I have faith." It's a whole different thing when you're out in the wilderness. When you're out in the wilderness, you know, where everything is very hard, where everything is dusty, where everything is dry, where there is no water, will you have the faith to get through? "Therefore, let us fear, lest while the promise of entering into his rest remains, lest some among you find that they are falling short from entering." Or some of you falling short from entering? Do you have a spirit of unbelief? Or do you have a murmuring spirit? You know, I've heard there's even some people still complaining about the Shemitah. We're 9 months into it. Instead of embracing it, where most of the brethren are saying this has been the greatest year of their life and how blessed they are, there's still some complaining about it. "Oh, why didn't we know sooner? Why didn't we have more time to prepare?" You're not complaining against man. You're complaining against Yahweh. And then other people that simply are not doing it. They're simply just ignoring the commandment of Yahweh to do the seventh year land rest. And Yahweh's not going to honor that. "For indeed, we have had the good news preached to us, even as they also. But the word did not profit those hearing it, not having been mixed with faith in the ones who heard. For we who have believed will enter into that rest, even as he said, 'As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. For behold, the works of Elohim were from the very foundation of the world.'" So again, we have to show the same faith. That's why I said Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are all laying in the cave of Machpelah in Hebron. Their bones are laying there. They did not receive yet the promise, and we have not received the promise. We have to show the same faith that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob showed if we want to get to the promised land. If not, take a look at that wilderness, because you're going to perish in the wilderness. If you don't show the faith in Yahweh, you are going to perish in the wilderness. And why do most people rebel? A lot of times it comes from fear. 1 John 4 and verse 15. Whoever confesses that Yeshua is the Son of Yahweh, Elohim abides in him, and he is an Elohim. And we have known and have believed the love which Elohim has in us. Yahweh is love, and the one abiding in his love abides in Yahweh, and Yahweh in him. By this, love has been perfected with us, that we have confidence in the day of judgment, that as he is, we are also in the world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. Because fear has torment, and the one fearing has not been perfected in love. And fear does have torment. I see people that come to me all the time with a spirit of fear. And like we always said, it's an acronym, false evidence appearing real. But fear brings torment. And people, like I say, 90% of fears will never happen, but yet people will be always focusing on the fear instead of focusing on faith. They'll be focusing on what happens if we don't have water? What happens if this? What happens if that? Instead of focusing on Yahweh's promise of protection. And love casts out all fear. If we love Yahweh, we will do anything to serve him. If we love Yahweh, we'll do anything to serve his people. And that love is the overriding factor, because you can't have love and fear. They're contradictory to each other. Galatians 5, 24 and 25. Galatians 5, 24 and 25. He says, but the ones belonging to Messiah crucified the flesh with its passions and lusts. Let us therefore live by the Spirit and surrender to the Spirit. So, yeah. Do you want to be part of like the Qumran community? Do you want to be part of the kibbutz movement that Yahweh's doing in these last days? You got to surrender. Because you're not going to come into the kingdom of Yahweh or Yahweh's kibbutz with this arrogant, prideful attitude of, I want it my way. And some people think, you know, from the West, that they'll just go there and use their money and they'll build their own little kingdom within the kibbutz, and it's not going to work that way. Because the kibbutz is an equal mindset. And you're not going to have people coming from the West who are just going to build their castles in the middle of people living in a community of tents. You know, in Ethiopia, they're living in mud huts. And they love it. They love it because they each have their own little hut for their family. They don't have electricity. They don't have air conditioning. They don't have refrigerators and all those things. But they love it because they have the presence of Yahweh. And Yahweh has blessed them like you can imagine. Story coming a little while ago. There was a group of somewhere 30, 40 men. They're having problems over there. And they have food shortages and whatnot. And they came from the main city. And they were going to come to Yahweh's kibbutz over there. And they were going to attack the people and steal their food. And somebody from the congregation heard about this in the city, and they called the people, the kibbutz. They said, start praying, because about 30 to 40 of them coming armed. They're coming armed. Those people never showed up. They disappeared. Nobody ever heard from them again. And Yahweh took care of it with his cherubs. The same way with Elisha was there, remember? And they're coming against Elisha. And then Elisha says to Yahweh, you know, should I show him to his man who's getting all worried? Look at these armies. And they look around, they see all of these chariots of fire all in the mountains. And look, there's times in the wilderness, like with the Waldenses, that Yahweh allowed people to die. So if he allows us to die in obedience to him for his name's sake, that's the greatest honor you can give in your life, the same way Yeshua died for us. But many times Yahweh will protect his people, and many times Yahweh will intervene. And we trust in that, because our trust isn't to survive now. Our trust is to make it through the wilderness to be in the kingdom of Yahweh, because that will be a kingdom of peace and of love and world without end. But you got to get rid of you got to get rid of this prideful, selfish mindset if you want to be part of that kingdom. It's that simple. You got to surrender. Has to be 100%. You have to let the Holy Spirit take over your life and be filled with those nine fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, long-suffering, faith, goodness, all of them. We walk the very roads the children of Israel did in the wilderness, as you see here from this picture. The very roads that the children of Israel were walking through, we were walking through. It was hot, like I said, up to 47, 48 Celsius, 112, 114. It was barren, rocky, dusty, dry. The Israelites coming from the city life in Egypt had many valid reasons to complain. But they had one great reason not to complain. They had Yahweh and Yeshua with them. So again, it's not an easy walk through the wilderness, but it was never meant to be easy. It's meant for purification. But wow, can you sanctify yourself in the wilderness? Wow, can you? Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter. starting in verse 1. He says, "And I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized to Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank the spiritual rock following, and that rock was Messiah. Yet Elohim was not pleased with most of them, for they were scattered in the deserted place," just like we said. "But these things became examples for us, so that we may not go lusting after evil, even as those indeed lusted." So these are examples, and Yeshua was with them. Like it says, Yeshua was with them, and that rock that followed, and that rock was Messiah. Exodus the 13th chapter, in verse 17. Exodus 13 and verse 17. "And it happened in Pharaoh sending away the people, Elohim did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, though it was near. For Elohim said, lest the people repent, lest they turn back when they see war and return to Egypt." So they could have very easily came from the Gaza Strip and coming in that way, the way of the Mediterranean Sea, but Yahweh said, no, if I do it that way, they're going to see the Philistines and they're not going to want to fight. So he sends them all the way around in the wilderness. "But Elohim made the people turn toward the way of the wilderness to the Sea of Reeds, and the sons of Israel went up armed from the land of Egypt." So again, there's no way to the promised land except through the wilderness. That's the way it's got to be over there. Verse 20 says, "And they pulled up stakes from Sukkoth, and they camped in Elam on the edge of the wilderness. And Yahweh was going before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them in the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give light to them to go by day and by night. The pillar of cloud did not cease by day, and the pillar of fire by night before the people." So, wow, right? So, yes, yeah. Was the wilderness hot? Was it barren? Was it rocky? Was it dusty? Was it dry? Absolutely all those things. Did at times they lack water? Yes. But they had Yahweh. They had Yahweh. They saw every night, they saw the fire of Yahweh burning there. Every day they got the manna from Yahweh. They saw that Yahweh provided for them water. And the same is today in our life. When you look at how much Yahweh has provided us, He's provided us the Hebrew Roots Bible, which I believe is the closest Bible in the English to any Bible for the last, since the English language probably started, based on the Aramaic and based on the Hebrew. There's other good Bibles too. There's other sacred name Bibles. But we have His Word, and in the right order, which is very important. That we have the Hebrew Roots Bible in the proper order of the books. We have concordance. We have lexicons. We have Aramaic lexicons. We have so much that Yahweh has given us in these end times. There is no reason for us to be deceived. And yet still people complain. Still people complain. And who are the ones that complain the most? Unfortunately, it's the ones that have the most. Because I don't hear a lot of complaints coming from third world brethren. These people are so happy. They're so joyful. They're so satisfied with what they have. And they're so zealous because they're part of Yahweh's congregation. And we got to get on the boat. Because, again, you'll never make it through the wilderness with a murmuring spirit. You have to change it. Exodus 14. We have to build that true faith in Yahweh. Exodus 14 and verse 8. Exodus 14 and verse 8. "And Yahweh hardened Pharaoh, king of Egypt's heart, and he pursued the sons of Israel, and the sons of Israel were going out with a high hand. And the Egyptians pursued them, and they overtook them camping by the sea, all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh, and his horsemen and his army by Pi-Hahiroth before Baal-Zephon." I've been there. We've been to the very place that's there. And here it is. You can see a picture that's like it, similar. "And Pharaoh came near, and the sons of Israel raised their eyes. And behold, the Egyptians were pulling up after them. And they were greatly afraid. And the sons of Israel cried to Yahweh. And they said to Moses, were there no graves in Egypt that you've taken us to die in the wilderness? What is this you have done to us to bring us out from Egypt? Is this not the word which we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, go away from us and let us serve the Egyptians? For it is good for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Take your stand and see the salvation, the Yeshua of Yahweh, which he will prepare for you today. For as you see the Egyptians today, you shall continue to see them, not see them again forever. Yahweh will fight for you and you be silent. And Yahweh said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Speak to the sons of Israel and let them pull up stakes." So here we see again, we see that Yahweh will fight for you. Drop down to verse 19. And the messenger of Elohim withdrew, the one going before the camp of Israel, and he went behind them. And the pillar of cloud withdrew from before them, and it stood behind them. And it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel, and it was cloudy and dark, and it lit up the night. And this one did not come near to that one all the night. Wow. So Yahweh literally intervened from these people. Yahweh protected them. Yahweh was with them every step along the way. If you don't embrace the wilderness now 100% and change the Western mindset and visit wilderness places, you know, go camping, go out, visit wilderness places, grasp and internalize what you need to change to make it through the wilderness, you're not going to make it. Unless you come out of Satan's society now and sanctify your life and build true faith and trust in Yahweh, you're going to perish in the wilderness. And like I said, we're already, the 40 years has already started a while ago, you know. Nobody knows whether we have 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, maybe at the outset, maybe most close to 20, which is probably not that. But it certainly ain't 40 years. We are getting closer every day, every month, every year. And it's more than likely looking at somewhere to 5 to 10 to 12 years is all that is left before Yahweh's kingdom comes to this earth, something around that time frame. So it's time, we're well into this wilderness experience, that you either have to get in the wilderness, you have to get your mindset in the wilderness, or you're not going to make it. We went on this pilgrimage, hoping to learn how to survive in the wilderness, what plants we can eat, or what ones are good for medicine, how we can find water, how to protect ourselves from predators. Yahweh answered our prayer by showing us there's only one way to survive in the wilderness. To totally leave the mindset of commercial Babylon, I'm talking about the worldwide mindset of globalism, and to trust him 100%. It's a process that can only happen in the wilderness. So you have to get in the wilderness to start that process. When we returned, and you know, it took us about 3 hours to get out of the wilderness, but when we returned and we saw the first city mall, everybody felt defiled and long to go back to the wilderness. As soon as we were out of that wilderness and you see the mall and the city, everybody just felt defiled and wanted to go back. You got to get in the wilderness. 1 Kings 19:8-9. And this is what Eliyahu, when he's running to Mount Horeb, right where Mount Sinai is. And he rose and ate and drank and went in the power of that food 40 days and 40 nights to the Mount of the Elohim Horeb. And he came there to the cave and he lodged there. And behold, the word of Yahweh came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Eliyahu?" Drop down to verse 11. And he said, "Go out and stand in the mountain before Yahweh." And behold, Yahweh passed by, and a great and strong wind, a whirlwind, tearing the mountains and breaking the rocks in bits before Yahweh. But Yahweh was not in the whirlwind. And after the whirlwind, there was an earthquake. But Yahweh was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake was a fire. But Yahweh was not in the fire. And after the fire came a voice, which was a small whisper. And it happened when Eliyahu heard, he wrapped his face in his robe, and he went out and stood at the cave opening. And behold, a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Eliyahu?" Wow. Right? Yahweh was not in the whirlwind. Yahweh was not in the earthquake. Yahweh was not in the fire. But he was in the small, still voice. You can't hear the small, still voice in the city. There's too much clutter. There's too much noise. There's too much clamor. You've got to go to the wilderness to hear the small, still voice. You need to hear that small, still voice that can only come in the wilderness. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Eliyahu, John the Baptist, and even Yeshua himself all went to the wilderness to learn to hear that small, still voice of Yahweh. Numbers 13 and verse 21. We'll be ending here shortly. And they went up and spied. This is when the spies went to the land. They went up and spied the land from the wilderness of Zin, again, right where we were, to Rehob, coming to Hamath. And they went up to the Negev and came to Hebron. Well, I think I'll drop down to verse 23. And they came into the valley of Eshcol, and they cut down there a branch and one cluster of grapes. And they carried it on a staff by two, also of the pomegranate and the figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the sons of Israel cut from there. So it was really interesting that the last stop we made was to biblical Tamar in the wilderness. Really, really interesting place over there. You know, in a place where the Israelites did go through. They're doing a lot of archaeological work down there. But it was really interesting because here it was, we're in the wilderness, right? There's not a, it's a Shemitah year. There's not a lot of gleaning you can do in the wilderness, as you saw the pictures. You don't grow anything there. And unfortunately, we didn't get manna from Yahweh each morning, although we did get food from our tent. You know, they made fresh bread for us with the Shemitah flour that we brought, and eggs and yogurt and all kinds of nice things for breakfast. But you know, in the Shemitah year, you always want to glean. And when we got to biblical Tamar, our last stop in the wilderness, what happened there? They had places that they let us glean, and there were mango trees, and there were grapes. And grapes usually don't come till a little later. The guy even said, this year, he said, the grapes are actually a month early. We're not sure why, but the grapes are here, and they let us go out, and we were able to get some grapes, some mangoes, and they brought grapes to our bus. And it was really a great way to end the trip, to be able to glean the mangoes and the grapes. Numbers 32 and verse 7. And why do you discourage the hearts of the sons of Israel from passing over to the land which Yahweh has given to them? So your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. And they went up to the valley of Eshkol and saw the land and discouraged the hearts of the sons of Israel so as for them not to go into the land which Yahweh had given them. And the anger of Yahweh glowed in that day. And he swore, saying, surely none of those men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun. For they have fully followed Yahweh. And the anger of Yahweh glowed against Israel. And he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation that had done evil in the eyes of Yahweh was destroyed. And behold, you have risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful men to add still more to the heat of the anger of Yahweh toward Israel. For if you turn away from following him, following Yahweh, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness. And so you will hurt all this people. Something to really think about, you know, particularly for our elders and leaders in the congregation. This is the time that you have to step up. This is the time you have to get a spirit of Ikkad. This is the time that you have to be unified, you know, with Jerusalem and with the work that we're doing here. Because if not, many more people can be left in the wilderness. And just look at those grapes there. Look, these people that came back and feared when Yahweh provided them with such things, and not just grapes, but like we saw pomegranates and figs and all kinds of things that Yahweh provided there. Let's go to Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy the 8th chapter. Two more scriptures and we'll be ending up here. Deuteronomy 8, starting in verse 1. You shall be watchful to do every commandment which I am commanding you today, so that you may live and may multiply and may go in and possess the land which Yahweh has sworn to your fathers. We don't want to lose sight of the promised land. The promised land is not Europe. The promised land is not Babylon. The promised land is not Niagara Falls. The promised land is not Canada. The promised land is here in Israel. And that's why by coming here to the feast, by coming here in pilgrimage and seeing these places with your eyes that Yahweh has preserved for thousands and thousands of years, it only helps you to get a greater grasp and to build more faith in Yahweh. And you shall remember all the ways which Yahweh your Elohim has caused you to go these 40 years in the wilderness in order to humble you, to try you, to know that which is in your heart, whether you will keep his commandments or not. And he has humbled you and caused you to hunger and caused you to eat the manna, which you had not known and your fathers had not known, in order to cause you to know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man shall live by every word that proceeds from the mouth of Yahweh. Your clothing did not wear out on you, and your foot did not swell these 40 years. And you have known with your heart that as a man disciplines his son, Yahweh Elohim disciplines you. And you shall keep the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim to walk in all his ways and to fear him. For Yahweh your Elohim brings you into a good land, a land of streams and waters, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, right? The seven species. A land in which you shall eat bread without want. You shall not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron and you shall dig copper out of its mountains. And you shall eat and be satisfied, and you shall bless Yahweh your Elohim in the good land which he has given to you. Wow. This is where our mind has to be. You know, first of all, you have to get out of commercial globalism, commercial Babylon, and get to the wilderness. But then once you get in the wilderness, you have to keep continuing to the promised land. This is where Yahweh has set your eternal inheritance. Every single true first fruit believer of Yahweh will live right here in Israel, where I'm filming this right now, for the next 1,000 years with Messiah, and then forever. The last scripture is Psalm 91. You must trust Yahweh for everything. If he took care of Israel, he'll take care of you. And like I said, the Shemitah, what an amazing year of learning trust on Yahweh and blessings, the Shemitah. And just like I told you, to end the tour and have them bring us those the things we could lean at the end there was just really another sign of Yahweh being with his people. But I want to end in Psalm 91. The last scripture is Psalm 91. Great place to end. Because unless you believe, you will not be established. Psalm 91. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide in the shade of the Almighty, right? Under his wing, in his shade. I will say to Yahweh, my refuge and my fortress, my Elohim, I will trust in him. For he delivers you from the fowler's snare, from destruction's plague. With his feathers he will cover you, and under his wings you shall seek refuge. His truth is a shield and buckler. You shall not fear the terror of night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, of the plague that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction laying waste at noon. 1,000 will fall by your side, and 10,000 at your right hand. It shall not come near to you. Only with your eyes you will look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you, O Yahweh, are my refuge, you make the Most High your habitation. No evil shall happen to you, nor shall any plague come near your tent. For he has given his cherubs charge over you to keep you in all your ways. They shall bear you up in their hands, that you not dash your foot on a stone. You shall tread on the lion and adder, the young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot. Because he has set his love on me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high, because he has known my name. He shall call on me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in distress. I will rescue him and honor him. I will satisfy him with length of days, and I will make him see my Yeshua. Wow. How awesome. This can only become a reality if you sanctify yourself and you enter the wilderness. This trip, wilderness trip, was an awesome trip. It was an awesome trip. Praise Yahweh, you know, there were actually 12 of us, you know, a very biblical number of complete government. 12 guinea pigs, or shall I say, honored participants, rather. But it is true, you know, that Yahweh was using the 12 of us to go out there and learn the lessons to bring to you. And now you can take those lessons, you can apply those lessons in your life, and you can really see. But I'm telling you, the Qumran community, and really understanding how it worked, and really understanding that only when everybody is surrendering to Yahweh, surrendering to the leadership, and 100% committed to the same goal, the same purpose, the same cause, can it really work. And it's working. It's working. Like I said, I am so excited that in our congregations, Yahweh is blessing us, that we're seeing this. We're seeing the kibbutzes. We're seeing the people come in. There's something really, really big that's been happening in the last year, and it's all happening in the Shemitah. So I pray, as we're winding down the Shemitah, that Yahweh will bless you. And I pray, even if you haven't done it really fully till now, or maybe you haven't done it at all, take advantage. You have 3 months left of the Shemitah. Take advantage and really try to the best of your ability, because I'm telling you, there is such a blessing for obedience and a cursing for disobedience. That's what we see to the children of Israel. And we want to be those who enter the promised land. We don't want to be those who perish in the wilderness. Shabbat Shalom.